may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Craig Bell. I'm with McGuire Woods. I'm sitting at appellant's counsel with me is Mr. Michael Brady, also with McGuire Woods, and together we represent Dulles Duty for your appellant in this case. The trial court in this case did something that the United States Supreme Court has never done, and that is to permit a tax directly on goods in export transit. The appeal presents before you a pure, as-applied U.S. constitutional law question. Can Loudoun County tax its gross receipts tax, toll tax, on goods that are sold that are in transit for export? You're going to hear a lot about in goods sold in transit for export. It's a term of art in this case. The United States Supreme Court has said, no, you cannot have a tax, a state tax, on goods in transit for export. The trial court chose to ignore or sidestep what we're going to argue is the binding on-point precedent, the Richfield Coal case, and look to newer cases of the U.S. Supreme Court, which adopted a slightly different policy test for the import-export clause for goods that are not in transit. And so the distinction we're going to find is there's a two-part test that the United States Supreme Court has created under the import-export clause. First, does the tax that the state or local government seeks to impose fall on directly goods in export transport? That's the first prong. Second prong, then, is where are the goods in transit? Were they in transit for export? The trial court, if you read that 13-page opinion, is very well tied into the facts. The facts in these cases are not, in this case, is not in dispute. You have two pages, you have very little cross-examination, the evidence came in pretty much unchallenged and is unchallenged in the briefs before you, that the goods sold by Dulles Duty Free, 92 to 99% of those goods are sold in transit for export. The trial court made a specific finding of fact that the goods were in transit for export. So under the two-prong test that I started, the trial court found the second prong, that the goods were in transit, and that has been decided, and no one really has.
The U.S. Supreme Court, it basically had a paradigm shift, right? So it essentially there was some academic and other dissatisfaction with the way they'd been treating these cases. And in Michelin, they go back to essentially original public meaning. They look at the history, and they say, all right, well, this is going to be the test. So how do we, I mean, it's not your garden variety situation where maybe some dissenters had questioned the validity of precedent and there's a torrent of criticism, but hey, they've never overruled it. They just seem to make a clean sweep, and they don't expressly carve out this scenario in their subsequent cases. So that's the difficulty, is how do we square all of that?
Sure. When the Michelin came, first of all, the Richfield case was a 1949 decision. The Michelin case, which is this shift, if you will, or this policy three-part test that the Supreme Court added in 1976, was addressing goods that were not in transit. In other words, in Michelin, factually, the transport, the import, and the export activity ceased. They were in final storage.
And
that's why the court went to adopt the policy right. to address that. And the Supreme Court.
But they don't carve out, hey, you know, we have this other line of cases and we're not.
No, but 2 years later in Washington Stephendorf, which is very highly cited by the county, that court specifically noted that Michelin was not addressing goods in transit and that the court specifically chose not to address how the import-export clause should apply when goods are in transit, and therefore Richfield still exists. I think it's uncontroverted that Richfield still exists. It is specific on-point authority for goods in transit. Michelin and Stevedore, which came up later, neither case involved a tax on goods in transit. And in fact, 6 months ago, this court dealt with a case called Clark versus, I think it was Virginia State Police, where one of the counsel was arguing for this court to kind of vivisect and speculate as to what the Supreme Court was going to do in that case. And this court cited Agostino, a U.S. Supreme Court case, that says we don't enter into the speculative business of plotting the future course of federal precedents. And in that decision in Clark said that if you have a decision that's on point, you follow it. The fact the Supreme Court might be bringing up other tests going another direction, that's for the Supreme Court to decide, not for this court to decide. And in that case, you use that precedent, Clark, to decline the invitation to speculate as to has the Supreme Court changed it or not, and we would say that that is equally as applicable in this case.
But yeah, but arguably a stronger point, because Washington Stevedoring specifically carves out the goods in transit, cites Michelin, cites Richfield. I mean, that to me is even a stronger position to be in from your perspective.
It's incredibly strong because, one, it's a well-reasoned decision, and it did look at the prior precedent, and it specifically said if goods are in transit, you got Richfield, Michelin didn't have it, we're not going to look at it until we have that factual sitting ahead of us to decide what we'll do, and therefore they didn't address it. Now, the other, factually in Washington, Stevedore, you actually didn't even have a tax that was measured by the value of the goods being sold. It was a tax on labor. Now, subsequent to...
Have you finished answering
yes,
this question?
Yes,
is it your position that if the tax is measured by the value of the goods, that it's always a direct tax? Because it seems to me the cases don't necessarily prohibit a tax that has an effect, but it prohibits a direct tax. And so how do I determine what a direct tax is?
The Supreme Court has given you the test, and it goes back to Chief Justice John Marshall in 1827 in Brown v. Maryland, when they, in an import-export class, said you look at the effect of the tax on the good. We're talking about a federal question.
That didn't really help me. I read it, but all of the taxes have an effect on the goods. Even the stevedoring case, eventually it's going to have an effect on the goods because the stevedores will be charged more. They'll charge more to unload. It'll eventually have an effect on the goods.
But the U.S. Supreme Court has said when you're looking at the operation effect of a tax on a taxpayer, it will be considered to be a direct tax. That's the Supreme Court. If the tax is measured by the value of the good sold. In other words, you can, for example, in Richfield, you have a retail sales tax. In Loudoun County, you have a BPO gross receipts tax. Both taxes, if you go and look at the statutes, which we've done, are privilege taxes. It's a tax on the privilege of conducting business.
Right.
Both taxes are measured by sales. The value of the sale is tied to the good being sold. So those taxes are basically identical. They're called different things. One goes to the state with a portion to the local government in California. This is a purely local tax. But if you look at the structure of the taxes, they're the same. They're a tax on the privilege of conducting business. They're valued, or the tax base is the sales activity. If there is no sales activity, there is no sale, there is no tax. And the court said in that case, well, then, therefore, the value of the tax base is on the sale of the good. That's the same thing as if it is a direct tax on that item, and therefore it is a direct tax for purposes of the import-export clause.
Okay,
and that's how you get there.
Help me with this, because their strongest argument, it seems to be, or one of their strong arguments seems to be, we are imposing upon duty-free the same obligation that we impose on anyone else. They're using our roads, the potential of using our fire department, the potential of using other services. And so why shouldn't they have to pay their fair pro rata share of these services?
Well, first, Dulles Duty Free does pay taxes. It's in the record that they pay approximately $100,000 of taxes each year to Loudoun County for property taxes. They do pay a BPOL tax on non-export sales. They do pay sales
like
tax.
Like 1% of their sales, right?
I'm sorry?
Which is about 1% of their sales.
I think up to 8% in 1 year. But still adds up to $100,000 of tax. And now the county's not without remedy. They chose to do a BPOL tax. If they did a retail merchant tax, they're mutually exclusive, they could tax the inventory stored at Dulles Import because transport hasn't started, and they could tax everything. And then you would be into a Michelin type of analysis. But they chose to do a beef poll, so they're stuck with the strict language of the import-export clause, which says no state shall, without consent of Congress, lay any imposts or duties on imports or exports. So that's the decision, and I would note that there are a number of cases which have wrestled with this kind of indirect tax being treated as a direct tax. This court has said for state law purposes it's a privilege tax. It's a tax for business activity measured by the volume of sales. But we're talking about a federal right to a taxpayer, in which case the Supreme Court has said it's an operation and effect test. And if
Practical operation and effect test.
Right. And in this case, if you have no sales, you have no B-poll tax. So therefore, the fact that there is a B-poll tax means there are sales. The sales is the measuring stick, and therefore the tax is in effect on the good. And in fact, if the person gets on the plane, when they walk through, they show their pass, they're just about to get in the plane, and they're handed their bag of goods, and the sale of title passes at that point, the plane is off, it goes. If that plane doesn't go, some aircraft, they come off, they have to turn the goods back in, and if that plane never leaves and that person doesn't leave, that sale is unwound and it goes back into inventory. There's no slippage, and the court found
in,
that.
In Richfield, how was the tax literally collected by the government entity?
In Richfield, it is accrued by the seller. It is paid quarterly. They collect it from the ultimate taxpayer. In Loudoun County, the B-poll tax is not collected by the individual individual customer. It is accrued by Dulles Duty Free and remitted on an annual basis. So you have an annual versus a quarterly, but again, for a federal constitutional analysis.
So that's the only difference, is
yes.
Quarterly versus annual.
The legal incident of the tax is still on the seller. It's just a question of, for the retail sales tax, they can charge the customer, collect and remit, and the seller in B-poll, they just have to accrue and remit. I would like to reserve, if I may, the last 2 minutes.
May I ask just one more question?
Yes,
so your position is that Richfield is the only case in this line of cases where there is a direct tax imposed on an export, and the court said you can't do it?
No, there are other cases.
Okay.
You have is the Supreme Court of Texas in Virginia, Indonesia versus Harrison. Post Michelin, Washington, Stevedore looked at Richfield, Washington, Stevedore, and Michelin in a case that involved goods for transit for export and found Richfield to be controlling and operative. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals reached the same effect in Louisiana Land and Exploration versus Pilot Petroleum in 1990.
Is it fair to say there's a split, though?
There is no split. Right. Frankly, for goods in transit, there is no split. Because Michelin and Washington Steve Store do not involve goods in transit. You have to make that determination first. If you make that determination, there is no split. One exception, and it's not an appellate court, it's a district court decision of Guam, back when you used to have judges appointed for three judges. 1 year after Washington
Steve Store. For instance, the West Virginia case seems somewhat similar to this.
Well, the West Virginia case is interesting because, first of all, that was a coal severance tax. And there are five opinions in West Virginia, that Supreme Court decision. All five opinions said Richfield is good law. The facts in that case did not involve goods in transit. They were just severing coal from the mines that ultimately would get to a port. So all five opinions in that case found Richfield to be controlled.
Thank you.
I'll reserve my last minute, if I may, of a minute
right.
Of 10.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Stephen Jackson and I'm appearing on behalf of Loudoun County. Thank you for the opportunity to be heard. The taxpayer tries to frame this case solely within the box of the Richfield oil case. It tries to argue that the facts of the Richfield case are so similar to this case that this court must look exclusively to Richfield and that nothing else matters. This myopic approach not only fails to recognize significant distinctions between this case and Richfield, but it also fails to consider the United States Supreme Court's modern policy approach under the Import-Export Clause.
Can I interrupt you and ask you this? Did the trial court in this case make a factual finding that these goods were in fact export transit?
The trial court made a precise finding that the tax did not fall upon the goods.
Well, I'm not asking that question.
And that the tax was not upon export. He specifically found that the tax is not upon export.
Well, did he make a finding that the goods were in export transit? Forget the tax for a second. Were the goods physically in export transit?
Well, that question, our premise is that the tax is not upon goods. That's our argument, Your Honor. So whether they're in transit or not in transit, to some degree, is sort of a red herring to us.
I thought you all agreed that they were in.
I don't know that the court precisely made that ruling. He did. The court did say that the taxpayer can, through tracking, through paperwork, can show that the majority of its goods do ultimately leave the country.
Well,
I don't know that that's quite the same as what the question you're asking, Your Honor.
Let me make it clear, then. Forgetting any legal implication, and I'm just asking a fact question, did the trial court find, as has been represented earlier, that 90% plus of these goods were goods in export transit? Whether they're taxed or not, it doesn't matter.
I believe he found that they leave the country. I don't know that the ruling.
Well, transit is leaving and the country is export.
I don't know that the ruling specifically used those words, Your Honor.
Or do you contest that 90%+ of the goods were in export transit?
I don't contest that they left the country. I'm not sure that I agree that they were in export transit.
What would be the difference?
How do you leave the country if you're not in export transit?
Well, I think our position, again, is that it's a business activities tax. So I'm getting confused by maybe the question. So,
as a factual matter, were these goods in export transit? What's the county's position?
I think once they get on the plane, yes. I mean, once the passenger
gets... What about the segregation of them within the facility? The customer pays for it. They don't get it. They get it on the tarmac, and then it gets on the plane.
I think you could argue that they are in transit.
Because the only time that they could possibly not be in export transit would be the extraordinary situation where somebody buys something, it's given to him on the tarmac, and then for some reason his plane never takes off.
That would be the circumstance where it wouldn't leave the country. Yes, Your Honor.
So and I can't imagine that that's more than infinitesimal.
But even more so than that, they unwind the transaction.
Yeah, you got to give it back.
Right.
All right. I think that point's been established.
Okay. The trial court considered the impact of Richford, but also looked to the court's refinements in its analysis in Michelin and Washington's Steve Dorans. In this broader context, the trial court upheld the constitutionality of the beef poll tax. This court should affirm that ruling. Richfield is not controlling. Richfield only speaks to a direct tax on goods, and therefore has no direct application to the beef poll
tax. Tell me why this is not a direct tax on goods.
Well, the trial court made the ruling that it is not, it's an indirect tax, and that it does not fall upon the goods themselves. The tax does not fall upon the goods themselves. The trial court made that finding. First, we have the express language of the statute. If we look at the beef poll ordinance, which was then the beef poll statute, which the ordinance enacts verbatim, it specifically says that. It attributes the tax. The measure of the tax is the gross receipts, but it attributes the privilege to engage in business activities. That's precisely what the statute...
But we all know we don't consider it based on what it's called.
Okay.
What it's called is not controlling.
Next, I would say the tax is not a sales tax. A sales tax is more akin to a direct tax on goods. This is not a sales tax. The triggering event, the accrual of
you're
the tax...
You're taxing the gross receipts. It's the
that's
equivalent
the measure,
of the sales
Honor.
Tax?
The measure is different than the accrual. That would be my point. And in this case...
So the only distinction, because it's gross receipts, is whether it's literally collected and segregated at point of sale, or whether it's collected quarterly, like California did it, or whether it's collected annually, like the Loudoun Beef Poll.
Well, I don't think that's quite right, Your Honor. I think one of the distinctions would be the calculation. Okay, so in Richfield, the case says...
Let me ask you this. Let's get right to the heart of it. Let's say there is a 17% sales tax on scotch and various other items, whatever they're selling. 17% sales tax. What would the difference be with that and the beef poll tax in terms of the total amount collected? It would be identical. Simply, it's when it's collected is the only distinction.
Well, I think our argument is that the accrual is different, that that's the measure, that there's a difference between the measure of the tax, which is the business activity. What we're doing here is the General Assembly has given us a measure of the tax. Every tax has an accrual, a measure, and a rate. Here we have the accrual. What the General Assembly has given us as a measure is to use gross receipts.
And you only get a receipt if you make a sale.
Well, in this case, Your Honor, we have a different situation because there's an initial threshold. You have to have $200,000 in gross receipts before there is a monetary amount. It's a flat fee. So for every business in Loudoun County, first of all, the tax applies to every business in Loudoun County, not just sales businesses. There are also service businesses, attorneys, accountants. Other businesses have to pay.
Yeah, but these aren't services.
Tax.
These are sales. We're not dealing with...
This is a retail. Retailing is the business activity that's here. So, you know, for each business activity, there's a different rate. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'll go back to my question. You have $1 million of sales. If you have a sales tax of 17%, there's going to be $170,000 collected. But it's going to be segregated at the point of sale. If you have a B-poll tax of 17%, you're going to pay $170,000 of taxes, but you're going to pay it annually.
Well, there are other differences in the way it's calculated. For example, you calculate it based on the prior year. The first year a business operates, it pays a flat fee of $30.
But why is all these distinctions without a difference? Richfield says you use a practical operation and effect test. Well, I understand what that means. Be practical. Don't be picky. So tell us something practical that matters.
Well, I think the accrual is different.
Does that matter?
Well, because I think what the General Assembly is trying to do, the activity that they're trying to tax, is different than a sales tax. In Richfield, you have a sales tax. I think that's undisputed.
But gross receipts are what you receive from sales. I think trying to make a distinction between sales and gross receipts is a distinction without a difference. You can't have a receipt without making a sale.
Well, the point I would make to that, Your Honor, and you've already pointed out, but there are other businesses. It applies to all businesses in Loudoun County. Some don't have sales.
But we're not dealing with a service business here. We're dealing with a sales with a retail business. We're dealing with the facts that are in front of us. In other words, this is an applied argument. Your opposing counsel is not making a frontal assault on the B-poll tax as being unconstitutional.
To that I would say, Your Honor, what they're really saying is they're saying that this is a tax on goods themselves. That's essentially what they're saying. So I don't see the as applied. I mean, what they want you to say is what they're trying to argue is that the B-poll tax is a direct tax on goods.
Yeah, but you're trying to make a distinction between goods and services, and I'm saying we're not dealing with services in this case. We're dealing only with goods.
Well, that's true. This particular business is retailing, so that's true. Although there are other business activities that occur at the stores.
But isn't the as-applied point, as Justice Mim points out, clear here, which is if you're taxing the gross receipts of a business that only puts goods in export transit, then they get the benefit not of the General Assembly's determination, but of the Philadelphia Convention's determination, which is you cannot tax directly goods, export goods in transit because of constitutional policy reasons.
I guess my response to that would be that first, this court has the final say in construing and interpreting the statute. And I think that's sort of a first step. So before you get to the second step, we have to have a final word on the construction and interpretation. And, of course, as we know, we have this very strong presumption of...
What debate do we have as to the interpretation of the B-poll statute or the corresponding ordinance? It seems to me we all agree what it says.
That the tax is on the privileged to operate a business. That's what it says.
Like Richfield. That was a tax on the privileged to operate a business.
Well, that was more... There's some other distinctions. I mean, I think an important factual distinction between Richfield and the B-poll tax... goes to the notion of services. In Richfield, there's no business activity. The case clearly provides that there's a contract, they entered into a contract, and they pumped the oil from a holding tank into the ship. In Loudoun County, we have a lot of business activities. We have six stores. They start off with five stores. Then they have six retail stores. They're open 7 days a week. They're open from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. The road network, this is all on the record, that all of the employees that go to the stores, the 100 employees, and all of the customers.
It makes sense, counsel, that you may be able and you should be able to collect something from them for those services. But help me to understand why the manner in which you are doing it does not completely butt up against the Constitution, which says you cannot put a direct tax on these goods.
Well, I think you need to look at the Michelin and Washington Steve Doran cases.
Neither of which dealt with the model of goods in export transit taxes, arguably on the goods.
I would say that Washington Steve Doran, the goods were in transit in the Washington Steve Doran case. The case draws a very...
Where the tax is on the goods.
Where the tax is on a business activity separate from the goods. And that's exactly what we have here. We have a tax on a business activity that is separate from the goods. It's the same with the...
Isn't the problem that you have, though, is that you're measuring the business activity based upon sales, and all those sales are things that are goods in transit. That's the distinction between the Washington Stevedoring case, isn't it?
Well, I think that case really tells us two things. First, that this Michelin approach applies to exports. That's another important thing that the Washington Steve Doran, because Michelin was an import case. So we now have a new test, right? We have to analyze whether it's an impost or duty based on the Michelin test.
But Stevedores, if I owned a Stevedoring company, I would not think I'm an importer or an exporter. I'm just a labor guy, and I offload and I unload ships.
And that's an activity that's separate from the goods. And
I get it.
That's what we're trying to argue.
Well, that's what Washington Stevedoring held, but that's not what we have here.
Well, I think that we do have business activities. We have a lot of business activities going on. It's not just a sales tax. It's not a tax just on selling goods. There's a lot of business activity that occurs, and that's what the General Assembly is trying to tax. That's the point I'm trying to make.
What other business activity occurs? I don't see it. You know, all of the tax, we'll call it, comes from sales. What other business activities occur?
Well, the record talks about giving away samples. They give alcohol samples
for the purpose of sales.
They have Godiva chocolate. For the purpose of sales. It's marketing. It's retailing. They do makeovers where they put makeup on women.
For the purpose of sales.
But those are other business activities that relate to retailing. Yeah, retailing is the business activity, essentially. Marketing and retailing. And we would argue that those are different from sales. It's not just a straightforward sales tax.
But why doesn't Crewe Levitt Company govern this where... Loosely, it says the state tax measured by the gross receipts is, in effect, an impost if proposed on merchandise shipped to foreign countries.
Well, I think that case from 1917 doesn't speak precisely to what we have here. And again, I think you have to look at it through the modern lens. There's more recent precedent. There's a new approach. That talks about a tax. And after Michelin, we know that it's not taxes that are prohibited. It's only imposts. And duties, or imports and exports. So I don't think that case fits precisely. I think there's been modern cases, and you have to look at it through the lens of the modern case law.
Isn't that the job of the United States Supreme Court? And what you're advocating is that we engage in anticipatory repudiation of that Richfield case.
We're asking you to uphold the tax. We think there's a clear, very strong presumption of constitutionality here, that the ordinance is clearly constitutional. It has to be plainly wrong. Otherwise, it should be upheld. So we're just asking that you affirm the trial court's ruling.
All right. Thank you very much. Rebuttal?
Let me ask you this question. If we're in... I'm not asking you to concede that, but hypothetically, if we're in Michelin land, do you lose?
If we are in goods for transit, we win. Right. If we are not in goods for transit, in other words, let's say this was just a storage site with no sales activity, I think under the policy test, Michelin would say you lose. But because you're in goods...
Well, I'm not asking you to concede your case, because
no,
you're saying
no, yeah.
You're saying this... Richfield is a rule of decision, apply it, we win. But I think you do lose if, you know, the Supreme Court down the line or whatever says, hey, it's Michelin and this is different.
Now, Justice Scalia will disagree with you because he specifically said...
I'm less worried about him now.
Intel. I understand that, but he said, look at the strict language of the clause. No state shall.
No, understood.
Okay. Yeah. I would like to, if I see I'm short, I want to address a couple of quick questions just that were asked. Justice Powell, you asked about Crew v. Levick. That case specifically said that a sale where it's a percentage of the gross sale on the product on a license privilege tax is a tax on the item itself. So that is the answer from that court, which is what Richfield looked at, and which, of course, is kind of the genesis of it.
The counsel's response to my question was, I'm not sure, I think he said, if it's not an impost or a duty, then it doesn't apply, because...
If it's a percentage based on the sales price, Crew v. Levick says... It is a tax on the good, and therefore it is an impost or a duty. And Richfield, because it cites that and applies a percentage based on gross receipts, is likewise an impost or duty. If this was storage, if this was not in transit, then Michelin says it may not be that tax, that in that case a property tax, may not be an impost or duty in that situation. But when it's a tax on the goods in transit, it is. And I think that's unquestioned under the law. The last point I'd like to, I know I'm done, is on
Mr.
page 93.
Your question, Justice Powell.
Yes, we did. Thank you.
All right, your time has expired. The court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.